Hey there, welcome to the Cami Pentecost Podcast. Let's talk about leadership, business, life lessons, and everything in between. Hi, everybody. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. Welcome to our podcast today. I couldn't be more thrilled about our guest, Shelly Archambault. Oh my gosh, I am so thrilled to have you as a guest today on our podcast. And I mean, quite frankly, you're one of my mentors. You don't even know that, but you have actually become one of my mentors for so many reasons. We're going to get into that here in a little bit, but let me just kind of give a little bit of your background. You are a best-selling author, and obviously today we're going to talk about your book, Unapologetically Ambitious. And who can't get excited about a title like that? I mean, if you're not unapologetic about being ambitious, you will be after this podcast. And you know, you're a best-selling author, experienced CEO, and you have had an amazing track record of building successful brands, high performance teams, and organizations. That's not all, guys. She has served on multiple boards as a strategic advisor for Forbes. And you know what? She also is a president of Arizona State University. So what don't you do, Shelly? I also know you're a mom, you are a wife, you are a grandma, and maybe you call it glamma, but you have got the full family going on too. And I'm just so excited to have you on our show today.
Oh, well, thank you. I've really been looking forward to it. And by the way, I'm an advisor to the president of Arizona State University. I haven't taken the president role yet.
Okay. Well, thank you for clarifying that, because I probably would have got a few messages. Well, so Shelly, real quickly, I was given this book. My dad gave me this book, and my dad is CEO of the company that I work with. And he gave me this book because I would call a boss lady. I'm also a mom. And I really feel like the world speaks enough to that kind of woman. You know, I think it's, you can be a mom or you can have a career, but the actual reality of doing both is not necessarily something that we're taught we can do. And so he gave me your book because he was like, here is a woman that is doing all the things that you want to do. And I could not put this down. So many of the things you have said I've lived, some I haven't, and we'll get into that a little bit. But most importantly, I believe success is an identity process. And once you can identify with someone doing what it is that you want to do, the rest is history. You know, it's just a matter of time. And so you are such a successful woman. And can I just start with a little bit of your story? I mean, obviously this year, especially 2020, pandemic, social injustice, political tension on a whole nother level. And Shelly, you are dealing with the limitations of a woman in business, but you're dealing with the limitations of a Black woman in business. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? Because you don't make an excuse for anything. You don't let anything be a limitation. You use it as an opportunity to spring forward.
Yes. You know, I was really very fortunate, Maribeth, in that I learned some early lessons. I really did, that made a difference in how I frankly looked out on life. It was clear to me growing up as a young girl of elementary school in the 60s, where it was very racially charged, you know, worse than what we've seen in terms of here. For as many people that wanted civil rights and felt that was the right thing to do, yet just as many that didn't. And my family moved around a ton. And a lot of times we ended up in neighborhoods where I was the only Black girl in my class, sometimes in the entire grade, sometimes in the school. Mm-hmm. And people made it very clear that they didn't think I'd amount to much and didn't really care if I was there or not. So therefore, I knew that the odds weren't in my favor to get what I wanted out of life. And then I combine that with a couple key messages from really my mother and reinforced by my father, which is life isn't fair. You know, you come home as a kid, things happen. People do things to you. You get pushed. Somebody didn't invite you to a party or you didn't write. These things happen. And you come home and you complain, say, Mom, it's not fair. Blah, 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 blah. It's not fair. And my mom would just look at me and say, you're right, Shelly. Life's not fair. What? It's supposed to be fair. You get one, I get one, you know, kids, even fair. So that really kind of laid the foundation of, okay, life's not fair. So what are you going to do about it? And then the last one is you can't control what people say to you because they said some awful things to me. And you can't control what people do to you, ditto, but you can control how you respond. So don't let them win. And they win if they impact how you feel about yourself, how you feel about your potential, right? So don't let them win. They don't know you. So those as foundations really helped me to be more intentional because I realized, hey, odds aren't in my favor. So if I just do what everybody else does, I'm probably not going to get much. So instead, I focused on, all right, what do I want? Now, how can I improve my odds of getting it? And that meant kind of building a plan, right? And then executing on it and trying to see if I could do things to make it more likely that I'd get the outcome I wanted. And it turned out, hey, that works. So I just kept doing it. And honestly, Maribeth, that's how I've approached my entire life, professionally and personally. I figure out what is it that I want? And then I ask myself, what needs to be true for that to happen? Which means you have to go do the research, whether it's a job you want, a role, a company, something you want to create. Okay, what does it take? What's it required? And then once you understand what needs to be true, then you ask yourself, how do you make it true? Which is basically the plan. And then you execute on the plan. So every step, that's what I did. I decided I wanted to run a company at an early age, and that meant being a CEO. I didn't really know what that meant, but now I had a goal. So I started working towards that goal, put a plan in place. I wanted to get married young if I could. I wanted to have kids young if I could. I mean, all these things I wanted if I could, but I started making decisions consistent with that. So that's how I've really worked to improve my odds to get what I want, despite the fact that I've held jobs and roles and done things that people who look like me hadn't done before.
Well, I personally am someone who has benefited from the road that you've traveled. And I think that I wouldn't say I'm somebody that always saw what I wanted to be, but I knew what I wanted to be in here. And so that's what I wanted to ask you is, did you have a role model that painted that picture for you? Or was that just something you felt inside? By the way, I'm using my girlfriend's Zoom, Mary Beth.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm calling you Mary Beth.
That's okay. It doesn't help you that I had that in the caption. Shelly, you've got so many things you're juggling. It's Cammie. That's okay. Mary Beth's my very dear friend.
Oh, let me tell you what's really funny. I thought, man, I thought this was with Cammie. I guess because we haven't met to see each other before, right? And then when I saw it, Mary Beth, I said, oh, well, maybe Cammie was the one who arranged it. And it's really Mary. So anyway, that's what went on in my head.
Well, my team was texting me privately going, it's because your Zoom room says Mary Beth. And I was like, oh, I'm using my girlfriend's Zoom room because we've got a big old company call on my Zoom room. So anyway,
oh, that's too funny. Well, I am sorry, Cammie, but that's exactly what happened. I was like, oh, maybe I have their name wrong.
And that was you being super professional and trying to redirect in real time, you know? Oh, so Shelly, tell me what drove you to be so ambitious? I mean, or know you wanted to be a CEO. And you explain this a lot in your book. By the way, if you're listening to this podcast and you've not read this book, I would strongly encourage that you get this book. Yeah. For those of you that have read it, it will be fun to meet the woman behind the book and hear kind of her unpack some of the thoughts. But, you know, where did that come from?
It's interesting. It actually came as a result of a conversation with a guidance counselor. You know, you have that obligatory junior year conversation. Are you going to go to college? Right. Et cetera. So go into the meeting. Yes, I want to go to college. Well, what do you want to do when you graduate? And frankly, I just wanted a job. You know, that was the whole thing in my family. Get good grades. You can go to a good college. So you can get a job. I said, I just want a job. I just want to be able to keep my thermostat at 72 degrees because in my house, it never went above 68. It would be below 68, but never above 68. I wanted to be able to eat in restaurants and travel. That's what I wanted, a job that would allow me to do that. And she said, well, what do you like to do? I said, oh, clubs, you know, organizations. I'm in everything, French Club, American Field Service, National Honor Society. I'm even a Girl Scout, but don't tell anybody. And so she said, well, you know, clubs and companies are kind of similar, pull people together, get things done. That's really what business is about. And I said, okay, great. Then I want to be in business, but I like running these clubs. So I'll go run a business. And when I looked around, the people who run businesses were called CEOs. I said, great, that's not my goal. I want to be a CEO. Now, Cammie, I had no idea what that really meant. I'm 16, right? But I now had a goal. And literally, that then became my life's mission was, all right, I want to become a CEO. So let me figure out what needs to be true. What's the education I need? What's the skill sets I need? What's the background? All those kinds of things every step of the way.
Well, and I think some of the things that inspired me in your book was when you went out and bought a maternity jacket, knowing you needed a jacket, but knowing down the road you planned on having babies. And so you're saving money already. And I was like, okay, that is sacrifice on a whole nother level. Or should I call it investment?
Choice. Yeah, investment, choice, all those things.
And I do have to say, that was one of my favorite things in your book, because I've always said to people, it's not sacrifice, it's investment. And you called it trade-offs. You know, what are the trade-offs you're willing to make? Because as a woman, as a CEO, as a mom, there are going to be trade-offs.
Absolutely. And life, if you think about it, life is really just the result of a series of choices and trade-offs you've made every step of the way. That really is life. And that's why it's so important to be intentional when you make them.
I'm writing that down. I love that. Series of choices and trade-offs. What were some of the hardest trade-offs, choices, as you look back over your life that you had to make that definitely put you into position to be where you are today, but definitely wasn't easy?
Oh my goodness. Very little of it was actually easy. From the point of making the decision to only take 5 weeks maternity leave and come back to work after my first child, that was my choice. I wasn't forced to do it, but I thought it was really important given what I was facing. And if I waited another week, I'd miss an important conference. So I did it. Hindsight, I'd do it again. It did work mean that good things happened to me in terms of being able to get things done work-wise. But it was hard. I mean, I went cold turkey on breastfeeding. Oh my God, talk about painful. So, you know, all of that. And then I commuted several times. I didn't want to uproot the family. And so therefore, okay, job will be either a short-term job or eventually the family move and join me. So I commuted. Every choice, every time you say yes to something, you're saying no to something else in the future, because you can only put so much on your plate. So you don't know what those no's are going to be when you say yes. But again, I don't, you look back and say, well, gosh, do you regret any of the choices and decisions that you made? So would I have preferred not to live through some of the things that happened? The answer is absolutely. But I am a big believer that everything that happens along the way leads to the next thing that's going to happen. So if I changed anything in the past, it would change where I am today. And in general, I'm happy with where I am today. Mm-hmm. Could it turn out better? Sure. Could it turn out worse? Sure. So I wouldn't change anything. It doesn't mean that I enjoyed living through all those decisions.
I have a almost 16-year-old, a 13-year-old and an 11-year-old. And I really enjoyed your transparency and talking about just some of the relational challenges with your daughter. Just some of the choices you made, some of the trade-offs that you guys did as a family. I even loved when you told them that you were moving again and you had her go talk to her little brother because you realized he would buy in more if it was coming from her. I mean, those were amazing mom tips, and I'm always looking for those things. I miss my son's birthdays on the birthday, but we came up with birth seasons so that then it wasn't you're missing the day, it's a season. So we celebrate any day that we want. My son's going to do a Facebook Live with me. Shelly, I meet with moms on a regular basis that have so much mom guilt. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. And, my mom was a stay-at-home mom and she says she had mom guilt. She had mom guilt that she wasn't doing enough or she was helicoptering too much and so I know it's on both sides, but can you talk to us about that for a minute? Just some of those emotions you battled?
I can. So first of all, you don't realize this when you're going through it, but hindsight, think about it. It's the only job you get of such importance that you get zero training for. Okay. Zero. They wouldn't put you like in the cockpit of a helicopter, right? And say, okay, figure it out on the job. We'll see you when you land, right? They wouldn't do that.
No.
But when it comes to having a baby, it's like, okay, you now have a baby. Guess what? You're a mom. And are there books and are there manuals and are there podcasts? Yes, there's all of those things. It's not the same as practicing, right? Which is why in most high intensity, super important kinds of roles. What do you do? It's hours behind the wheel, right? It's practice that they want you to have before you actually get out there. We don't get that as moms. And yet the expectation is that we should be perfect, that we should be perfect. And trust me, our kids will tell us every day how we're not perfect. So, you know, is it surprising that we have all this guilt because we're measuring ourselves on, are we perfect? When frankly, nobody showed us how to be perfect to begin with. The piece that I will tell you is all you can do is your best. All you can do is your best at the time. It's like any decision, whether it's personal or it's professional. You take the information you have at the moment and you make the best decision that you can. Sometimes you make a mistake. And so what do? You course correct. Well, guess what? You do that at home too. And realize that a lot of times we also set standards for ourselves that even our kids don't really have for us. You know, we feel guilty that, oh my gosh, they lost their first tooth and I wasn't there, right? I didn't see them take their first step. I wasn't there for the, whatever, the fifth grade something or other, right? But I will tell you, many times, they don't even remember, especially when they're young. They don't know you weren't there to see their tooth come out or that they took their first step. They don't know that. So why are you holding yourself, right, hostage to that overall guilt? And when we're guilty and we feel guilty, that actually comes across too. And that's not really helpful to you or to your kids. So all you can do is say, listen, I'm doing my best. When you're perfect, I'll be perfect. Because guess what? They're not either. We are all people that are in constant development and constant improvement. We're still learning. I'm still learning. I'm a grandma and I'm still learning. So yes, realize the guilt you feel, everybody feels. I think it comes because we live in such a judgmental world. But don't let it hold you back. Don't let it keep you from doing what you feel you need to do, right? Don't let that guilt weigh you down. It only weighs you down if you accept it and carry it.
So you're talking about not being perfect. You're talking about like, you know, there's so much growth opportunity on this journey. Can you talk to me about some of your best tips for time management as you're juggling the family, the business? You can cover that any way you want.
Yeah. Ruthless prioritization, ruthless prioritization. You know, I tell people all the time, this whole notion of work-life balance, I think is ridiculous. Learn, you know, I have my work priorities, my professional priorities. I'm supposed to keep things separate and equal. Well, we learned a long time ago that separate and equal is not equal. So why are we even trying? No, put those two together, professional priorities, personal priorities, put them together and then ruthlessly prioritize. So you get done what needs to get done. And that means there's some things aren't going to get done. Either be willing to live with it or find somebody else to do it. If you think about it, right, what happens is we say yes to things in the moment that may not be our priorities. And then later, I made the point earlier, we then have to say no to things that we really would like rather do. We can only do so much. So prioritization is so, so important. But one of the things that I found is in order to truly prioritize, I'm going to go back to this whole notion of how judgmental a world we're in. You need to decide for yourself what you're willing to be judged on. Because the world will judge us on everything, everything. I mean, people come to your home and they open the door. And if you're married or have a partner, right, what they'll say is, oh, Shelly, what a lovely home. They don't say, Scotty, what a lovely home, right? So who am I? Who's judged? I am, right? My husband walks out with a wrinkled shirt and people might think, gosh, how could his wife let him out with a wrinkled shirt? They don't think, why didn't he take the time to iron his shirt? You know, we get judged on all these things, which is just ridiculous. On who we are, what we do, how we look, then we're judged on everybody around us, how our husbands are, or our partners are, or our kids are. I mean, we get judged on everything. So no wonder we feel all this guilt and this pressure. No. Decide for yourself what you're willing to be judged on. You know, I'll give you a great example, and you read about it in the book, but my daughter was born with thick, curly hair. I mean, really thick. And the best way to tame it is you brush, comb, and braid it. Well, I grew up braiding hair, so not a problem. My husband, 6'2", former athlete, big hands. Had he braided little girls' hair? No. Did he need to learn? You bet. I couldn't do it all the time. We're a team here. So what did that mean? He had to learn. Well, guess what? Just like anything else, when you first start, it's hard. It's not easy. I mean, and I couldn't redo it, because if I redid it, then that would demoralize him. And he'd say, fine, you do it forever, right? That's why you don't ever redo somebody else's work. Mm. So she would leave the house looking kind of jacked up, you know, crooked part, one thick braid, one skinny braid, askew. I mean, all kinds of different ways for, you know, a month or two until he really got the hang of it. Well, I knew that when she got to school, and again, it's preschool, but when she got to school, people would look at this child and think, where's her mother? How could they let her out of the house looking like that? But you know what? I didn't care. Because what was important to me was Scotty needed to learn. And she's 4 years old. She didn't care, right? You don't care how you look when you're 4 years old. So to this day, we have a picture on our wall because it was picture day and Scotty's turn to do her hair. And he braided it and pinned it up on top of her head to make it look like a little crown, you know, two braids, really cute. Well, he didn't pin it that tight. And so by the time it was time to take pictures, one braid had fallen down. It was kind of unraveling. The other one was still on her head. But here she is. She didn't care. She's a happy little girl. Well, guess what? We still have that picture on the wall in my home. Because it's an example of decide what you're going to be judged on and let the rest go. Mm.
That's good. I heard a quote one time that said, if you're not being criticized, you're not doing something right. You know, so you know, if you're really on the pace to get where you want to go, you're going to be criticized. I mean, that's just a part of it. And mm-hmm. And I love what you just said there. Decide what you're going to be criticized for.
Yeah. All decide right. What you're going to, what you will accept, right? Certain things you're just not going to accept. It's like, okay, you're right. It's not important to me. You know, just don't let it stick.
I tend to be a perfectionist. And if I'd have seen my daughter's hair, like with braids, thinking about what other people would think, I'd be like, oh, I got to fix that. But I love how you said, if I judge that, then I have to grade it all the time. Or if I criticize that, and I do think you have to decide which mountain you're going to die on. Right. And in on the, your road to success, whatever that road is, you have to decide what those things are that are going to truly take you to where you want to go. And those things that are not.
Absolutely.
All right. So be a little transparent with me. Talk to me about some of the obstacles that you've had to overcome, because obviously you've had so much growth. You've had so much success. What are some of the biggest obstacles that you've had to overcome?
Oh my goodness. You know, obstacles where I was, you know, ready for the next job or the next promotion and nothing's coming. Nothing's happening. It's like, oh no, Shelley, just be patient, right? There isn't an opportunity or nothing's quite right. You know, be patient, be patient. I'm not very patient. No, I think part of building a plan is putting a timeline to it. Mm. Now, when I say patient, I don't mean patience for weeks or for months or whatever. That's not what I mean. But a lot of times, if you just accept what people say, suddenly a role that you thought you'd be in for maybe, you know, 2 or 3 years, it's like 5, 6, 7 years. Well, no, this is your career. It's not the company's career. It's not your mentor's career, right? It is your career. So it's important for you to decide what it is you want. And if you're ready, and that's the key, if you're ready, you have to qualify. You ask the question, have I demonstrated what I need to show, right? Am I doing a good job? Am I getting the right feedback? So you have to make sure you're executing. But if you are, then you should be ready for this next role. Be patient only up to a point. You have to stand up for yourself. I've had to find another job someplace else to help me continue to move forward, even though that's not what I wanted to do, right? I had to escalate and talk to boss's boss to understand why am I not getting a role, just to find out that there were a miscommunication on what I'd be willing to do or not do, et cetera. So all of those things happen. And what's really critical is it's just like driving a car. And if you're heading to the grocery store and you come across some road construction, you don't stop the car, turn off the engine and wait until the construction is finished so that you can drive forward, right? You don't turn around and go back home and say, well, I guess I can't go to the grocery store today. No, what do? You take another path. And if you don't know one offhand, you pull out GPS and figure it out. Your career is the same way. Decide where you're heading. Create a plan to get there. And then when you have the roadblocks, the hurdles, whatever it might be, don't stop. Don't turn around. Just find another path.
Mm. And just
I'll make a shameless plug for your book. I loved the back of your book where you actually put together the plan, like you walk through the plan, you know. And for those of you that are listening to us today, I know you guys are going to rate and review this podcast. I know you're going to jump on and buy this book, but it's called Life Planning 101. And it's not just about your career. It's about your family plan. And I think that's so important, Shelley, because the main audience we're talking to right now is women. And I don't believe anybody said to me, Cammie, you have to have, you can be a mom or you can have a career. You can't have both. I don't believe anybody said that to me, but nobody modeled for me both. And so I think subconsciously I was thinking maybe you can't do both. You know, I thought being a school teacher would be the career path that allowed me to do both. And yet it certainly didn't put me where I wanted to be. And so I'm on a mission to show more women, people like you that are doing both. And I love yours and Scotty's story where you talked about the roles that you guys were going to play. You were very upfront. You didn't even marry him until you knew that he was okay with the kind of man that you needed. I wish I would have listened to you before I got married.
You know, it's so funny. But you're right. You know, part of why I wrote the book this way, you know, people are like, do we really need another book out there? But what I wasn't finding in books was the whole story. I could read about professional people, right? What they did, how they got there, all those kinds of things. But I just have one life. Yes, I have a professional set of things, I have a personal set of things, but it's just one life. And I wasn't really finding and seeing the discussion around the whole thing because it all has to come together. I wanted a long-term partnership in a marriage. I want a long-term partner. So that was one of my goals. And I couldn't look at that completely distinct from the fact that I wanted to be a CEO. I had to look at those two things together. Otherwise, it wasn't going to happen. And I was fortunate. I got both.
Yeah, but you planned.
I did.
I think you can say you're fortunate, but what you say in the book often is you took calculated risks.
I did.
And I'm a big believer of like, when's the last time you did something for the first time? Because I believe you really got to be willing to step out of your comfort zone, try new things. But one thing you said that I have not thought of when I'm saying that is calculated risks. You know, when you succeed, where will it take you? If it doesn't succeed, where will it leave you? And so I think that's a very different posture and perspective.
Yeah, I'm so glad you raised that, Cammie, because risk-taking is really important. And it's also something that I've seen as a CEO, as a board member, that it actually can hold some women back because executives need to take risk. Companies, the whole notion behind the legal entity of a corporation was so that people could come together to take shared risk. You can't grow without taking risks. You can't expand without taking risks. You can't develop new products without taking risks. Right? It's all risk-taking. So when people are looking for who should be the next leaders, they need people who have demonstrated that, yes, they can execute, but also people have demonstrated that they can take calculated risks. And that they understand why risks need to be taken. They can, that means they will have some failures, absolutely, right? And learn some from some failures. But if you aren't willing to take risks, then you can't be one of the senior leaders because you won't be able to get the company to grow, to expand, to whatever. So you have to be able to demonstrate risk taking.
That's really good. So Shelley, talk to me for a minute about, I have like three questions for you and I'm going to keep us in our time frame. Give me kind of a loose day in the life when you're running as, you know, your kids are home, both your kids are home, whether you're commuting or your home is in the place where you're working. What did a daily schedule look like where you're running a company, being a mom, taking care of you? Cause you talk about that a lot too in your book. What did kind of an average day look like for you?
All right. So average day, and I'll talk about the kids being older because I wasn't a CEO when they were younger. So kids are teenagers, right? So day in the life then was wake up and I hit the gym. One of the things I learned is exercise was really important to me. So I pack the bag the night before, go to the gym, shower there, and head right into the office. Do the work, whatever it is that I needed to do and wherever it was. And then depending upon what was happening that evening, sometimes there was a basketball game or there was a
Bells. My daughter performed in the Bells, which was kind of a synchronized dance that was done in the South with football, you know, games, et cetera. Sometimes there was a football game with a Bells performance, right? So you'd then figure out, okay, head to there, et cetera. At this time, we made the trade-off and my husband was actually a stay-at-home dad. And that was an amazing, amazing gift. So that he could make sure the kids got fed, right, et cetera, where they need to be. And then I'll get home, catch up on what's happening, make sure people are getting homework done, whatever's required, et cetera, and then work on the plan for here's the next day. So during the week, you know, that's kind of how that schedule would work if I wasn't traveling and things were going on. And the big piece that I tell people is even if, you know, I was forced, we made the decisions and the hard choices for Scotty to be able to stay home at some point, but that doesn't mean that it's the only way to be successful. You know, you can get help. I tell people all the time, there's a witching hour. I call it the witching hour. The witching hour is about whenever the kids come home from school till about 7:30, 8 o'clock. That's the witching hour. And so let's say, you know, whenever they come home and that, because that's when everything has to get done. Everybody's got to get homework done. You got to get fed, plan for the next day. If the kids are little, you got to bathe, et cetera. So listen, take those few hours. Take those few hours and hire somebody to come and help. Mm. And when it comes to what do they do? Whatever you don't want to do. If what you want to do is you want to sit down on the floor and play games with the kids, then fine, have them heat up something for everybody to eat, right? And do whatever. If what you want to do is to bathe them, then you do that. If you don't want to bathe, then you want to actually get whatever. Just another set of hands can make a huge difference. And honestly, that's not that expensive. Mm-mm. It's not that expensive. You're talking a few hours a day. All right, but it's that crunch time. So think about how you relieve crunch time and then make the trade-offs. I'm a big believer, financial flexibility. You know, people, what happens is everybody makes choices and decisions and they fill up themselves up with all these fixed costs. And then they decide to have kids. And then they decide they need to do things. Suddenly the dollars they have for flexibility are really small. Plan in advance. If that's what you're planning to do, plan your budget around that so that you have some financial flexibility to be able to get the help. We all need the help.
Yeah, there's a reason they say it takes a village to raise a child, you know? And I think that we're being arrogant if we think we're an exception to that rule. And I think it's okay to let people help. And our people are going to be better because of it. And I had to learn a long time ago that, you know, that was the best way to be a mom, was to allow others to help me, to not think I could had to do it on my own. And I love even you giving us permission to hire someone to do the things that we don't love. Because I think we put too much pressure on ourselves that we need to do all the things, or it has to look like this. Where in reality, I mean, Shelley, I'm with you. If I'm not working my business, I'm with my kids. Everything else, I can hire out, you know. And even in the beginning, and some of you are sitting here listening right now going, well, I don't have the money I need yet. Shelley, one of my favorite things about your story is before you even got married, you and Scotty, or early in your marriage, you set aside money early on knowing you needed to hire someone to help in the early stages of your career. And so I really don't think it's a matter of I don't have enough money yet. I think it's a matter of priorities.
It really is. You know, I tell people, set your priorities and then make sure that your budget matches the priorities that you said were important. Mm. Many times that's not what happens. Mm-hmm. And that's why keeping that, you know, long-term vision in mind is so important. Date night for my husband and I for several years was literally pizza and a bottle of wine. Okay. I mean, that was date night because we didn't have money, but we had great childcare. We had great childcare, right? We lived way out in a small place. But we had great childcare. This childcare, we decided, was the number one expense in the budget. And everything else had to work around it. So I'm not saying that's what your priority has to be. But think through, what are your priorities? And make sure that as you lay out your budget and how you spend your precious resources, that it matches those priorities.
All right, Shelley, I'm going to ask you something real personal.
Yep.
When you doubted or weren't seeing things come together like you were seeing in your mind or feeling you wanted them to, how did you keep pressing in, you know, when you were feeling discouraged, when you were just frustrated in the process?
Yeah, no, really, really good question. Honestly, I'm a big believer in having cheerleaders around you. because there are many times you're going to get frustrated and be disappointed and things aren't going to go quite as you'd hoped, et cetera. And if you're like me, many times I internalized it. I'm like, okay, I'm obviously not good enough, or maybe I'm not cut out for this, or maybe, right, all you internalize that. Well, you need people around you who are going to keep it in perspective, who can remind you how good you are, who when you're doubting, oh, maybe I shouldn't go after this, or maybe I'm not cut out for that, or whatever it might be, are literally like sports cheerleaders. You know, go, Cammy, you got this, Shelly. You know, come on, let's go. Remember what you've done before. All those things, these are the cheerleaders in your lives. And frankly, just like sports teams, you know, why do you think they get together in a huddle and they have cheerleaders and the whole bit? It's to get themselves psyched up, because you know what? Life is hard. People don't tell you that. Life is hard. We need all the help we can get. And frankly, a cheerleader, people in your corner that are saying, you got this. I got your back. Keep going. You can do this. I believe in you. I needed that because I had a lot of self-doubt at times, and especially imposter syndrome, right? All those things. I needed people around me. And fortunately, my husband was a great cheerleader. You know, my mom was a cheerleader. Siblings played that role at times. Friends played that role at times. Anybody can be a cheerleader. But go make sure you have them in your life. These should be the people that after spending time with them, you feel better about yourself, not worse.
That's good. That's real good. Because I have found I have to protect that more. You know, the more successful I become, the more I have to protect those people that are cheering in my life, you know, and they're rooting me on to that next level. All right. So I have never asked you this. You wrote this incredible book, A Celebration of Women Knowing Their Power. What was your heart behind this, Shelly? Like if you had one wish from this book, from our time together, from the women listening, what would it be?
It frustrates the heck out of me. Matter of fact, frustrates probably not even a good word. It really, really irritates me that so many people, but especially women and people of color, don't even get the opportunity to contribute to 50 or 60% of their full capability. That frustrates me. And so I'm hoping as a result of the book, of sharing strategies and techniques, some tools, some hacks, right? Showing that, hey, listen, nobody's perfect. Don't expect that you are. Letting people know that it's okay to take help, right? I did all along the way that by sharing these things, that people will be able to take some of these tips, techniques, things that hopefully you can go start doing tomorrow and improve their own odds of being able to achieve what they want to achieve and actually be able to contribute to their full capability. So what do I want? I want more people to achieve their aspirations, but especially for women and people of color, because I think we over-index on not getting that full opportunity.
Well, we have all those self-limiting beliefs as it is, and then we allow the limitations that others put on us to keep us from going out and going after what we fully deserve and are capable of. And again, this is kind of full circle, and Shelly said this in the beginning, you guys, but life isn't fair. Life isn't fair. So are you going to sit around and be upset about life not being fair? Or are you going to do something about it? You know, and that's my desire, Shelly, is to keep sharing stories like yours, mine, other women out there, just what it looks like getting after it, just so other people can know that it's possible for them too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And please, if there's one thing you walk out, whoever's listening to this, you walk away with this, just realize you own your career. You own your life, right? It's not your company. It's not your boss. It's not your mentor. You own your career. You would never spend, you know, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 on an airline ticket, pack your bags, hold your mail, put the dog in the kennel, let your neighbors know you're going to be gone for a while, right? Head to the airport, strap in that seatbelt, and then look at the pilot and say, so where are we going anyway? Right? You would never do that. That's crazy. We do that with our careers all the time. We spend tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars on education and training and conferences and books and learning and all these things. And then we put our heads down and work and we wait for somebody to tap us on the shoulder and say, oh, you can go do this now. Oh, you can go do that now. No, it's your career. Decide what you want to do. You invested in it. Make sure you're getting the return you actually want.
So good. All right. So one last thing, and I would have said this before that, but if you could give us one or two mantras you live by, what would that be? He gives tons of mantras in the book, and I just but what would be, because it's funny, Shelly, I have mantras that I use for my colleagues, my company,
My kids use them on me all the time. They hear me say them and they're like, oh, mom, you say. And I'm like, That's right, I do.
That's right. That's right. No problem. So, you know, here are several. You know, one, know your power. We all have more power than we think we have. Know your power. Be intentional about your choices and your decisions. Make sure you're keeping that long view as you make them. Self-care is critical. Make sure that you are taking care of yourself along the way. So those are a few that I would offer.
I love that too, just because that was one thing that I short-sighted myself on early on. You know, I was taking care of the kids, I was taking care of the work, but I didn't take care of Cammy. And Cammy's not good for the kids or for the work. And so I did notice, I was like, okay, she's working out. She's dancing. I love, you talked about that a lot in your book. You love to dance and you guys would go out dancing a lot together. And it just reminded me how important it was to take care of yourself. So yeah. Shelley, thank you for your time today. This was beautiful and a dream come true for me. So thank you for being a guest on today's podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun, Cammy.
Good, 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 good. All right. I'm sure we'll talk soon.
I know you enjoyed today's podcast as much as I did. Whether you are a newbie or a longtime listener, be sure to hit the subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Until next time, I'm Cammy Pentecost.